Welcome, travelers. We're aware that your journey was difficult, but prepare to have your questions answered, for you have been granted an audience with the Masters of Modern.
And welcome back to the Masters of Modern podcast. I am your host, Alex Kessler, here with my co-host, Ben Bateman.
What the heck did you do with Alex Kessler?
I recently got a job at NPR, and this is the base level of voice that I'm allowed to talk at now on this podcast. Is that the NPR theme song?
All right, guys, we're here to talk magic. Let's move away from what we just did there.
I don't know if okay, cool. My voice is back. I didn't know if I could break it. It might have been stuck there forever. That could have been a permanent thing.
Your method.
Yep. I was into character. I was ready to talk about sweaty products and other nice things.
I know where you're going with that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite sketches.
SNL 90s throwback.
Yeah, it's great.
That's what we're starting off with this week.
Baldwin. All right, guys, this is the Masters of Modern podcast. I'm your host, Ben Bateman. This is my co-host, Alex Kessler.
Am I?
We're here to talk modern with you guys.
Yeah.
And it's another day of the week. You're hearing this on that day. And
you tweeted us what day of the week it is.
Yeah.
Hashtag today.
And guys, we have things to talk about today. So today's episode is going to be all about sideboarding in modern. We talked about this, I'm not even kidding, I think 100 episodes ago. I think we did an episode on sideboarding over 100 episodes ago.
I don't think you were in the were you in the sideboarding one?
Maybe you and Glenn did one and then we did one 6 months later.
Okay.
I think
I for sure did a sideboard one with Glenn, and I thought it was Travis.
Maybe. Travis Wu or Travis Boese?
Boese.
Okay.
Boese.
Either way, it's been years.
Yeah.
Legitimately, I think almost 2 years since we've done a sideboard episode. And a lot's changed. There's a lot of cards that have been printed.
Yep.
There's a lot of decks that are different.
And a little bit of this episode is we're going to go through each of what I would call tier one and tier 1.5 and maybe tier two decks and talk about maybe what the best three sideboard cards in the format are against it. But we're first going to start about like how to develop a sideboard, what your plan should be.
Yeah, there's a lot
how to mitigate the 15 card slot issue, things that people have brought on in the past to maybe fix some of the problems in modern.
There's a lot of
sideboards.
There's also philosophy stuff with sideboarding that I've been thinking about a lot recently and talking about a lot recently that I want to share on here. So let's start out by giving a quick shout out to the various things. The first of which I want to just highlight, which is unbelievable. The Masters of Modern Facebook group is so awesome. Like, that's 2 months old. Not even. I think it's like seven weeks old.
Yep.
And it's got close to 700 people in it as of right now. It's like it's what's it called? Exponentially
growing.
Yes, that's you saw the finger movement I was doing there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of think that was just regular growing.
Yeah.
Exponential is like a curve.
Well, I was doing this.
Look growth, more like a line.
Stop talking.
Learn geometry.
The growth has been exponential. And what's really cool about that now is that it's a really committed group of 700 people that by the time you guys hear this is probably going to be closer to 800, I'm guessing, that if you post the deck list, you get like dozens and dozens and dozens and sometimes hundreds of comments.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very, very cool interactive space, and I recommend everybody who listens to the show to go do that. Also, we're on Twitter. You can find us there at the MMcast, another great space to interact. But unfortunately, with Twitter, if you tweet like a very specific question, sometimes those questions get lost because that's the way Twitter is. The feed just gets jammed, and then
plus, you know, tweeting at us on Twitter will answer that question, but it doesn't necessarily get posed to the group of all other Masters of Modern listeners. Also, I realize that it's algebra, not geometry. Continue.
And then
I'm at Kess Wiley on Twitter.
There you go. And I'm Ben Bateman Media. And guess what, guys? I got verified on Twitter this week.
He's got a blue check.
Yeah.
I'm super jealous.
Now, if you don't know what that means, it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah, I got hired by NPR.
Yeah. All right. But if you're on Twitter a lot, it's totally one of those things that reminds me of being in high school where I was like, man, if I was ever as cool in high school to get verified on Twitter, I would have been really cool in high school. That's what I was thinking about.
That was the realization of years of effort of being a online personality that all of your high school friends would have been like, hey, that Ben guy is pretty cool for being verified. You know,
right.
Most likely teenagers these days, like,
it's not even cool to be verified. Like, they don't even care.
It's like, if you're verified on Snapchat, that'd be good. I don't know if they have verification on Snapchat.
I think Snapchat's dying anyway. I think Snapchat's like
they're just not making money after.
Yeah. Anyway.
Because they have no way of making money.
I recommend two things. One, download Anchor, the app that I do a show on called 10 Minutes of Magic. And two, make fun of Kessler for not being verified on Twitter. That's what I would say. Also, he's not laughing. Also, I have said it before, but we are going to be doing more and more content on 10 Minutes of Magic about Modern. Kessler is going to be guesting more often, and I don't think I'm turning that station into the Masters of Modern station, but I would say that it's going to be probably a little bit more like a 50-50 split. A lot of the conversation that I have recently is about Modern, and it just feels like there's an audience that is familiar with me that wants to hear Modern stuff, and if there's a place to hear more of it, if you guys can get 10 extra minutes of content a few times a week on it, then I think it's probably a good move. So
technically, it's 50. Would you, if there's 10 minutes of magic every day of the week?
Yep.
You don't skip Sundays.
Nope.
What about the Sabbath?
Nope.
All right. So if that's true, then there's more content
on 10 Minutes of Magic.
On 10 Minutes of Magic a week than there is in this podcast.
In a given week, yeah, it's definitely true. You get over an hour of content in a given week if you download the app, and it's easy. It's free, anchor.fm, find the station, 10 Minutes of Magic. Point is, if you guys like Masters of Modern,
like push notifications?
It'll tell you. It'll be like 10 Minutes of Magic has new stuff for you.
Okay.
And you can call in, and you can like basically tweet at me by calling in. People do it. Jeff Roberts does it. Brandon S. Russell does it. Heath Moore. There's a few listeners of the MMcast that do it a lot. So anyway, that's that thing. Other than that, there is a Patreon we have. We use it. It helps us stay in business here. We need to buy a new recording box. What's this thing called?
A Roland R44 recorder.
We're probably going to buy something new in this space soon because this one's getting a little jankified.
Keeps
and
buzzing.
Yeah. Sound. And like that's helpful when you guys help out with the Patreon. So everything we've ever bought on the show is a result of that. So that's, I think, the shout outs aside from Jimmy and Josh, of course, who are on Collected.com.
Yeah, make sure to check out Command Zone. I'll be guesting on their show. With some of the Commander content eventually that's coming out with the new Commander sets that are getting spoiled next week. This week I have a spoiler card.
And it's sick.
But we can't talk about it until I have it. But it's coming out this Thursday. Follow me on Twitter to find it. It's the 8th. Or the 9th. It's Thursday. Whatever Thursday is.
Yeah.
It's
a very personal card.
Yeah, it's going to be sweet. Last but not least, let's get on to the episode. I got nothing. Go to Collected.com.
Yeah.
It's like all of the stuff is there.
Yeah, we just did all the shout outs.
If you're cool, you'll go to collected.com. Or subscribe on iTunes. Or check out the Facebook group. Or follow us on Twitter.
Or
donate to Patreon.
Let's talk
Or make fun of Ben because he broke his hand.
Yeah, I have my hands broken.
Yeah.
But
no, they didn't know that.
Verified on Twitter.
Yeah, I had to find something. This has been a weird episode so far.
Strange, yeah.
We love all of you, and yep. We're going to now talk about magic things. First off, before we get into the subject matter of the day, Magic Digital Next announced their first product, their digital thing.
Yeah, well,
we don't know anything about it at the time of recording this episode because this was recorded on Thursday last week.
Yep.
But currently called Arena, correct?
Yeah, they said this falls under the Magic Digital Next umbrella they've been discussing. There are speculations running around that this is basically Magic's Hearthstone clone. We've talked a lot about the different variations on this idea that could and will exist. And if they're starting a new game, new platform that's going to function a little differently than Magic, where all the cards are new and it's not backwards compatible with actual real physical Magic cards or Modo, it'll be like a fascinating thing to watch happen. And I'm hoping that it's not the car crash in slow motion that, you know, it potentially could be, because it's a huge undertaking.
I mean, what if it was just only the cards that top aided GPs and Pro Tours in 1 year, every year, then they just add the next year? I was thinking, or like every 6 months, or every GP, that just those cards get added. Like that size of a card pool where all the cards are provenly powerful.
Oh.
I mean, it doesn't, that might not be the exact qualifications, but
those are the relevant cards. I think that's really tough because it really means that if you're somebody who wants to be creative, it doesn't really let you use Digital Next as a creative expression tool, which is like, I can speak personally, and I know there's a lot of people that feel that way, that like playing the cards that you want to play, the way you want to play them, is a lot of what the appeal for Magic is. I think what you're
talking
about.
Well, but eventually, if they don't have standard, eventually that becomes like a frontier-like format where that becomes large enough where you do get that creativity to a certain extent.
To a certain extent, yeah. I mean, I'll be fascinated to see what they do here. I definitely think Magic's in its moment where like it needs to do this and it needs to take a crack at it.
Oh, you know what it could be?
What?
You know how they're developing the core set to be a more limited, less limited focused, more introductory experience? What if it's just the core set cards?
Hmm.
What if the corset is attached to Arena? And then they come out with sets maybe assigned to each set that's coming out, or the block. Like, we'll get dinosaur-themed ones, but...
Yeah.
It's a thing. All right.
I'm just trying to think about how the game interacts. Like, is it Magic, but it's just the digital version? Or is it like Magic meets Hearthstone? So it's not, it doesn't play
it's
the same
Portal
way.
Magic, where there's no instance except for cards that say you can cast as an instant speed.
Well, you don't know that, but.
No, I know.
Oh, really?
No, like I don't. I know I don't know.
Oh.
I know nothing.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, basically what we're talking about is if it's in any way different than regular Magic, then you can't have the same, it doesn't, there's no backwards compatibility if the game is played slightly differently.
Sure.
Which is, and that's the really interesting sort of, where do you plant your foot with this idea? Like, when they were coming up with that, I'm sure they kicked this around forever. They have kicked it around forever. It's not even out yet. So, Digital Next, that was the big announcement. Aside from that, we've got things going on. You know, there's rumblings. There's more rumblings now about Mox Opal, it feels like. I had a lot of conversations over the course of this last weekend about Mox Opal getting banned. Actually, 2 weekends ago, about Opal getting banned. Where do you stand on that at this moment? Next Tuesday.
I don't think I've really changed my opinion beyond the fact that I think it's on the top three likely cards to get banned in January.
Got it.
If, like, Affinity keeps eating through the hate. Like the decks that seem to do well against Death Shadow and Death Shadow itself are bad against Affinity. And on top of that, if Lantern wins another GP this year, I'd be really worried about Mox Opal.
Yeah, that's true. And Lantern is such like the deck that can sneak in and get the win. Whereas, like,
and it's like a relatively toxic deck. Like, it's not good for Magic theoretically.
Lantern.
I'm glad decks like that show up, but. A deck like that winning 2 GPs in 1 year is something Wizards is probably not like, oh, I really don't want that deck to win the Pro Tour.
Right.
And I wouldn't be too sad if Affinity didn't win the Pro Tour either.
Well, so that brings us really into the heart of this episode, which is a discussion about sideboarding philosophy, strategies, and how sideboarding pertains to the metagame and Modern.
For those new to the digital content making, that is what people in the biz call a segue.
Thank you for pointing out the segue.
it was very well done. I wanted to it was a very well done segue,
oh, thank
and I
you.
Wanted to I wanted to highlight it.
Excellent.
For the internet.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Alex clearly is not back on the show yet. This is his NPR clone just doing his voice. This is what it comes down to. This is where my mind with sideboarding starts, right? So it's like Modern and a format like Modern, and really any competitive Magic format, but specifically the ones where the CMC is so specific and the card choices, because they're so vast, are very specific in what you play in a deck. When you construct a 60, a main deck 60, it functions in this very, very specific way. And when you sideboard, what you really have to figure out is, okay, two things. Number one, what is my deck doing? What is my deck doing in game one? What is my deck doing in game two? And potentially, what is my deck doing in game three, right? Like, so a couple questions that are super important to ask. On the play versus on the draw, what are you taking out of your deck to make room for the sideboard cards? And the sideboard cards you're putting in, how greatly do they affect the strategy that you were going with as your A plan in game one? Because the 60 is the most important part. The 60 is very, very carefully tuned. If you do something like sideboard as many as 6 cards, you're changing 10% of your deck.
Well, I feel like that's not always true. And I use this as a Remand as the best example of a card that falls against that kind of classic knowledge. Because, yes, in decks like Infect or Affinity or Storm or even Collected the Collected Company deck you're playing,
yep.
Burning Tree Emissary, Superior Burning Coco,
right.
Every card does matter a little bit. Though yours has a little bit of a toolboxy feel to it. But if you look at Jun or you look at blue control decks or you look at stuff, a lot of times it's better to play a card in your main deck that you know is generically worse than other cards, but is better against more decks. So Remand is always semi-relevant. It's never great, great. Sometimes it's amazing, and the Ancestral Visions or the Cascade triggers that you get to Remand, those are the best. But most of the time, it's just serviceable.
Right.
But it's serviceable against everyone, and then it allows you in your sideboard games to be like, okay, I'm playing against Affinity, take this out, put in Stony Silence. Oh, I'm playing against Living End, take this out, put... well, actually, it's good against Living End. That's a bad example. I'm playing against... another deck, take this out, put this in. And it allows you to have in your main deck versatility and sacrifice that versatility in game twos for straight power.
So let's talk about level one of this idea of sideboarding, which is that level one is that you need to be hyper aware of how is your deck going to change after you go to sideboarding.
Correct.
Now, in any way, like whether you're changing three cards, you're changing seven cards, do you know what, like, do you know what the four worst cards in your deck are, like the easiest ones to take out, your go-to cards? And if you don't, are you going to be able to, on the spot, make that decision because of your knowledge of the format? Like, how well do you know it, and how it, understanding what happens to your deck after you swap cards out? Because, like right. you said, some decks can do it. Like, deck like Infect, switching out six cards is going to be major, unless you have the specifically exactly right cards in your sideboard.
Yeah, or you're doing siding into cards that are generally worse, but more on game, still on game plan. So, like in Burn, an example of that is Destructive Revelry is a worse burn card than probably any other card in the deck, but because it is good against artifacts and is still on game plan, it's easier to side that in than, say, Stony Silence, which just does nothing to further your game plan, even though it might stop your opponent from doing something.
Yeah, like, let's talk about for a second the idea of a nuke sideboard card. So, good example, Stony Silence, right? Sure. Stony Silence is probably one of the premier, like, nuke cards you can possibly...
I think if I had to pick the nukiest nuke card that has ever nuked, I'd probably pick Rest in Peace.
Sure.
Like, it's over. Like, you exile cards that are there, any card that wants to go there next.
Right.
It's a harder permanent to deal with than necessarily an artifact, which Stony Silence is as well. But there's, like, if my strategy is graveyard themes, I can't really not, like, Rest in Peace turns me off. Versus Stony Silence, where you can still attack with your creatures.
So let's just say for a second that you mold a six in a game against Affinity Game 2, and you know you need to draw Stony Silence, because it's like that you've, Affinity is really powerful. If you don't get it, they're probably going to win. And you go to six, and there's two Stony Silences in your hand because you have four in the sideboard. So you keep the hand, and you play a Stony, and they play an Ink Moth Nexus on turn one, and they play any land on turn two, and they attack with their Ink Moth Nexus. And you sit there trying to fiddle around, putting together a strategy, trying to like piece together a clock or draw a piece of removal, and you don't draw one.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually they get the second Ink Moth Nexus and the second land, and they just kill you in like seven turns.
Sure.
And you just lose the game because you sided into a card that effectively stops part of their deck, but you didn't figure out how you were going to sideboard into a strategy that also made your deck better. And that's a thing, people make this mistake a lot.
Sure.
People make this mistake all the time. I've noticed it a lot this last week in playing Coco because you have to keep the density of creatures high enough in game two. But I want to play things like Stony Silence and Leyline of the Void and Lingering Souls and more removal spells.
Right.
And they don't really work with Collected Company and Aethervile in the way that I want them to.
Sure.
So it's something I've been thinking about a lot, which is like, I think that people make the mistake a lot of wanting to over sideboard in game two, not realizing they're going to affect.
So, yeah, and I think we've gone into a slightly adjacent tier, because I think that's a second consideration. I think going back to your first level considerations, which are what do you take out and what can you put into your deck, I think that's the most important mistake that people make while sideboarding. I think what you want to do is go into mtggoldfish.com or go into another metagame, top 8, MTG top 8, or even the Wizard site, and look at what they consider the top XYZ of the metagame. Because
right.
they have a percentage breakdown of the top decks in the metagame. And literally go through each deck, and in your deck, say, which cards can I take out against this opponent? And which cards do I have that are bad against that opponent? Because if you go through that process, then you know, okay, against Affinity, I need to take out three cards, but I can take out five cards.
I've seen people do the list thing where they have the list written down in a little book with them
yep.
of what they sideboard against each matchup, or they like print out paper.
Which you should generally I recommend to people, especially first runs into tournaments.
Yeah, especially if you're playing a stock list that you found with a stock sideboard, like a recent sideboard.
Or you did testing. Like, you can come up with that list yourself in your own processes. Or, like, even ahead of time, it's better. Like, I would almost say always come in with a list, but be willing to deviate.
I would agree. So let's talk sideboard philosophy for a second before we get into specific cards.
Well, we're on that right now. That's why I'm kind of saying this is what we called this in the first time was the elephant strategy, building your deck where your 75 is being kept in mind the whole time.
Yes.
And that's what kind of the Remand strategy is a little bit, where really your sideboard is part of your deck. The other one is, you know, making sure, because the amount of tournaments I've gone to where I've had five sideboard cards for a matchup, that like I was like, oh, I'm ready for this matchup. I have five sideboard cards that would be good against it. And I'm like, oh, I only have two cards I want to take out of my deck in this matchup. That means that three of those cards, especially if they were specific for this matchup and you had two good ones that were generically good for this matchup, were wasted sideboard slots that now when you play against Tron, you're going to have a card you won't have enough sideboard slots for. It. You'll be like, and then you'll play against an opponent. You're like, oh, I like can't beat this without any sideboard cards, and I wasted it on a different opponent.
Totally. So, so let me ask you personally: are you someone who prefers to play high impact 3 and 4 ofs in your sideboard, or are you somebody who prefers to play a sideboard strategy with lots of ones and twos and varying ideas like a Kataki and two Stony Silences kind of a thing?
The later. Almost. And there's arguments for different sides, and it really is more important on your matchup percentages. Jund and grindy mid-rangey decks, control decks, can do the different cards a little bit better because they're already kind of 50% against the field. If you're already at that 50% of the field, you can be a little bit more versatile while sacrificing strength. But if you're like, oh, my matchup against Affinity is just so terrible that there's no way I can beat it, and Affinity is in the top three decks, or if your matchup against Grixis Death Shadow is so bad, then you should have nukes against that strategy.
Right.
You should just come out with, you know, something that can just beat that always, and indestruct, you know, whatever that's going to be in your deck. And that's dependent more on what your deck you're playing. But almost always, I'd rather go one Kataki, one Stony Silence, one Wear and Tear, and one Ancient Grudge. Not that all those would see play. I guess Naya might play all four of those. Then four Stony Silence.
Interesting. I'm beginning to find more and more that I'm a four of guy. Like, I have done the thing where it's varied, but I think I'm beginning to find that, like, some of the decks in Modern are so aggressive and they're so singular in what they're trying to do that if I need to take out your graveyard, I don't even want to give you a chance to thought seize it. I want four Leyline of the Void. You know what I'm saying? That's what I want. I want to be able to start the game with Leyline in play, and you have to answer my Leyline or you're going to lose. Same thing with Affinity. Like, I this happened to me a bunch. Like, I thought that I had a decent hand against Affinity kind of a thing, and it just turns out they're a versatile and fast enough deck that if you don't have a nuke, Affinity will find a way. So I lean towards, like, against certain types of decks needing the four of. And
your deck right now that you're playing, that's where the other side. I think your deck right now is a bad matchup against Affinity. Inherently, right. Like, the way what your deck does, it has some strengths, but like, you don't have flyers, you're not good at blocking flyers, so you need something to just be like, nope,
right?
And the grindier decks with Affinity specifically or other decks, that's why they lean on graveyard more, is that's not as much of a problem because I have four Lightning Bolt, two Terminate, three Path, X amount of Collective Brutalities, X amount of Abrupt Decays, X amount of Fatal Pushes, so Affinity is not as much of a problem as, say, Tron.
Right.
And that's the other side of this scale, because I think there's nuke its face, kill it now. There's versatility, where three of my sideboard cards are good against the strategy, but can also be used against different strategies. And then there's ignoring it. And for instance, if I'm playing Jund, I almost always lean to just ignore Tron. Especially in a GP environment where, A, I think Tron is bad at GPs because GPs are aggressive. And this is an Eldrazi, and this is classic red-green Tron. Specifically a bad classic matchup for Jund. Because there's a lot of effort I could put on my sideboard to make myself like 3% better in my 20% chance of winning against Tron. Or I could save those slots for other decks that I can make sure I win against. Maybe the nukes I need for Affinity. And just, if I run into it at the GP, the chance of me running into it more than twice is really low, like astronomically low in Modern.
So what do you do against Tron?
And it's possible I dodge it.
So what do you just do? What do you do if you're playing Jund, you didn't sideboard for it at all, and you go against Tron?
You be aggressive, and you just...
Hope.
Hope. Like, you still have the chance of doing the turn one Thoughtseize, turn two Tarmogoyf, turn three another creature, Bob, so you can just keep gas going.
Or like Liliana.
Or, I mean, like in the sideboard, you can try and go for it. Be like, and I've played one of or two of Sowing Salts or
Fulminator Mage.
Fulminator Mages, because those are good against other matchups. And there are things you can bring in, but almost every time I've, like, in testing, your matchup against Tron is like 80-20, and the bringing in the sideboard cards maybe brings it up to 70. And, like, is it worth? And if you're at a Friday Night Magic or a local tournament and you know your metagame just has Tron players, because that's a thing, and that's the place I've played against Tron the most, is at in FNM environments or, like, Thursday Night Magics. And in that situation, then you have to then metagame against it. And that's the point of knowing the metagame at your store. And in those situations, that's what I do. Fulminator Mages and those cards are all important.
Now, the next part of this is really like there's a level two to sideboarding. I mean, we're not talking specific cards yet, but like, okay, at the highest level, when you're playing in like, say, the A bracket, the best players have been playing their decks for a long time. So they know the obvious things you're going to bring in against them, which means there's a good chance they're bringing in things against which you're going to bring in against them. There's a chance they're bringing in cards against you, but there's also a good chance they know if they're Affinity, they're going to see you bring in a Stony Silence, and they're bringing in Wear Tear to take out your Stony Silence.
And this is something that happens most often with linear decks that have easy sideboard answers. Dredge, Affinity, Lantern Control, even Tron to a certain extent. These are decks that know, oh, my opponent, or Storm.
In fact.
But in fact, to a certain extent.
They used to bring in Twisted Images against your spell scouts.
Right, right. And these are decks that are like, oh, I know that the best cards against me are available to my opponent, and Burn is another one. That actually is another good one. And I need to have answers against those things to be able to win. And because they're so linear, they know, okay, there's going to be a graveyard hate spell. And most of the time these days, people's graveyard hate for Dredge are going to be more in line, that's problematic for them, are going to be more in line with artifacts than they are enchantments. But very easily, okay, I'll bring in Wear and Tear, because that'll help me deal with either side of it. Or I'll bring in Ancient Grudge, because I'll mill that. That's part of my game plan to a certain extent, and I'll be able to, in response,
right,
cast it on a thing. And that has more to do with like knowing what your metagame is and being able to plan around it, versus the mid-range decks or the less linear decks. I think more often are going to be the ones focusing on finding the correct hate card against the situation. You know, I mean, but like Twin used to bring in Karinoses against Jund,
right?
Where that was a unstoppable answer for Jund. If they were able to cast it, good luck. I get a free Lightning Bolt every turn.
I recall Twin bringing in like just like basic stuff like Echoing Truth or like Pact of Negation against me in sideboard games, where they knew you were going to try to Torpor Orb them or something like that and go long,
right?
And they're just like, all right, I'll just pact your thing and just win because I'm going to win.
Well, in a ton of these decks, especially the decks like that where the combo is kind of like
wins instantly.
No, not even wins instantly. I there were a bunch of Twin players that would just take Twin out game two.
Oh, right.
Where it's like, A, they're going to bring in hate against me. I know they're going to bring in Torpor Orbs. How do I make the hate they bring in against me worthless? And like, oh, if I don't have my combo and I just end up beating them down with flyers that are and like red, blue control cards, what are they going to do to me other than lose? This
right.
is also one of the reasons Twin probably needed to be banned, because it had the versatility of both being a tempo deck, blue-red control deck, and combo deck. It was all three of that classic Magic rock-paper-scissors matchup.
Those Twin decks that used to bring in Delver were so sweet.
Those were cool. Yeah.
That was awesome.
That was Rug Twin, too. That had Tarmogoyf in the deck.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's kind of where I'm at on that. When it comes to crafting a sideboard plan, knowing your matchups is going to be the most important thing, or at least thinking about it, and then also knowing how many cards do I have to side out. Because eventually you'll get down to, like, 20 cards. You'll eventually have your, like, 50 card, these are all the sideboard cards available to me in Modern. I'm playing this deck. I know what my bad matchups are. I know what cards I need to take out. All right, I'm down to 20 cards in my sideboard. So how do you get down past down to the 15. And that's also where I think the versatility sideboards come into play.
And I also think another thing that's very important to pay attention to is that the end of the tournament day, when you realize that you've played seven rounds and or nine rounds and you've sideboarded some, so you've sideboarded a card in eight of those nine rounds, that should be in your main deck. Like, it's okay to realize after one tournament that one of your sideboard cards was so prominent. Like, let's say it's the fourth path. You're like, well, I guess I should just be playing the four paths then instead of skimping in game one. Or if it's like, you're every single game, you're bringing in the Quazali Pride Mage that's been sitting in your board and you're playing Hate Bears. It's like, well, if you need to do that, then it should just be in your deck. Main deck.
Well, and that's kind of why I point out the Remand side as well. Because the reverse of that is, I don't think if you're setting out a card in every match, you should get rid of it.
Right.
Because, though I do agree with what you just said, for sure, but in the Remand example, there are just cards that are bad game two.
Right.
And or they're bad against decks generally, but they're good against decks. They're bad against decks specifically, but good against decks generally.
Explain what you mean.
Remand. We went through this already. So basically the idea is that Remand is bad against the field when you're playing against specific decks, but it's better against the field than random cards that are only good against that deck.
Sure.
And so you have that in your sideboard to switch out, and so you have an easy switch out ability versus something like Path in your sideboard where you feel like that should be a part of your deck.
Sure. So that probably wraps up our philosophy portion of the conversation about sideboard.
I'm trying to think if there's anything else. Oh, I guess we didn't really finish the thought, which I do think is the third level, which is what you were mentioning before, of can your card be on your game plan but is sideboardable? And that's with the Destructive Revelries, where, or even to a certain extent, Leyline of the Void out of Living Index.
Right.
Because Leyline of the Void comes in against graveyard decks, but then also is a extra board wipe against those decks. Like, they now when you wipe it, it exiles it only on their side.
Right.
So, like, it makes it so decks that are really creature heavy that you are going to have to spend time killing, Leyline of the Void is this extra little bit of graveyard hate, but it also turns your board wipes that are normally just regular board wipes, and then those decks have those availability to creatures into exiles effects, into terminuses. Once again, Destructive Revelry, it's on game plan. Your game plan is to burn them to death. Destructive Revelry continues that game plan, but also makes it so you can get rid of their artifact-based hate card or any deck card out of affinity to make sure they don't kill you quicker than you kill them. And that's one of the reasons that's really important in that matchup. So there's a lot of different examples of cards that are really good on game plan, but are also more sideboard cards.
Right. I've often thought about those cards that have a marginal amount of damage or life loss to your opponent that also have like a proactive effect, like Destructive Revelry and Counter Squall and Vapor Snag. And like, I wonder if there's a modern deck that's just like Snapcaster Mage and then all of the marginal spells that do damage to people.
And just like a way to filter through them so that you're...
And just like you're basically playing some like multicolor control deck with like Snapcasters and Jace Rin's Prodigies and just like... And maybe Delvers or something, but every one of your spells is like doming your opponent for two while still interacting.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if it's like a cool thing. Like, how main deckable is Destructive Revelry in Modern?
I don't think it is.
How many of the main decks that you go against is it reasonable? It's obviously good against Affinity. It's fine against them.
Affinity, Lantern, Tron.
It destroys Eidolon against Mono Red. It's an enchantment. Of a Great Revels.
Sure.
Destroys that. What about Drazi Tron? They play like 12 artifacts. Destroys Ballista, destroys Expedition Map, and it destroys Relic.
It's bad against Dredge. It's bad against...
Does Dredge not play a single card that it does anything against?
I only kill a single card in the deck.
It's
bad against... Well, I guess it's okay against Merfolk. I guess, like... It depends on how good Aether Vial is that week. Because if Aether Vial is around, then I'm more about it.
Right, there's like Vials. Yeah, it's probably like not great. You'd probably want to play like two in the main or one in the main or something like that. Counter Squall being kind of a similar card where like it's probably... Counter Squall is probably better.
I think Counter Squall is a target in every deck. I think there is a deck playing an instant or sorcery in every deck in Modern.
And Snag is probably good against almost every single
Snag one. Is good against every... Like I think a blue-black... I think a Grixis Delver deck... that has multiple Counter Squalls and multiple Snags is like not the worst idea.
We're talking four colors if you throw in Revelry.
I'm cutting Revelry.
You don't like Revelry?
I don't like
that deck.
Revelry.
You know, I'm always obsessed with playing like sideboard cards main deck and building my decks around sideboard cards.
Well, I don't know if you've always been that. You have been on that kick for the last year.
I've been thinking away for a long time. I've been trying to build around Spell Sketch forever.
One of my first decks in Michael Grothy, who works with us and also runs Hideo Comics, recently someone was like posting on the group about a Selective Memory deck, and he was like, ask Alex about that. And I like totally forgot this was a thing, but one of the first decks I ever built was in Standard back in Zendikar block when I first started again. And I had a Selective Memory deck with a bunch of like Swamp Walkers and Mountain Walkers. And the idea was you would Selective Memory away all of the creatures that didn't have the walk you wanted for the opponent you were playing.
Sick.
And so it would only be like, oh, and it's a bunch of swamp walking cores. And but, you know, they're just like 2-mana 2/1s. And then my deck's mostly lands that were bad.
Yeah, Selective Memory doesn't get rid of lands, right?
No, it makes your deck. You
all
really
land.
Want lands. If you could do a deck that you just want all lands for whatever reason.
Right.
Selective Memory might do a thing.
Is that the one with the dude's face?
It's like Jace, but his face is all blue.
Yeah, right? Yeah, yeah. Search your library for any number of non-land cards and exile them and shuffle your library. Which, like, okay, so you play the multiple Eternal Scourge Mist Hollow Griffin deck, and you exile all of them.
Yeah.
And now you have an extra 8 spells. That's, like, totally fine, right?
Yeah.
It's 4-mana draw 8?
Yeah.
Seems horrible.
It's not. Well, it's draw 8, 5-mana mediocre flying creatures.
Scourge is 3 and Griffin's 4.
Well, and you actually, there's another one. There's the Trade Winds, the elemental.
Oh, you're talking about the Torrent elemental?
Yeah, Torrent elemental.
Yeah, well, you can put him into play from exile. You can't cast him from exile. But yeah, same thing.
Same thing.
Yeah. Well, I asked a trivia question in 10 Minutes of Magic about like this exact thing.
Oh, how many cards?
How many cards
exile?
Exist that you can cast from exile? And I had to be very specific. And Torrent Elemental like officially counted, but like was super confusing because you can't actually cast it.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you.
It's kind of a sick deck. It's a horrible deck.
I think as a one of, and you have one of each of them, and then you get to like, if you have other ways to abuse those, and you have one Selective Memory, it's kind of cute.
Or you play 4 Selective Memory and only a few of those. So when you play Selective Memory, it's like you would need more than 2 or 3 of them because Selective Memory has to be like draw 5. Otherwise, it's not that baller.
Well, I'm saying you abuse the other creatures in ways other than just Selective Memory. Like, is there ways to abuse? Like, isn't there a way to deal this in Legacy? The food chain.
Oh, the food chain deck. You can't do that in Modern, though.
No, but is there like another way to take advantage of exiling your own creature for free and then being able to cast it?
I don't know.
Not a good one. All right, moving on to the real world, other than this weird tangent. I do want to kind of walk through some, you know, do what we were talking about and go through each of the decks in Modern in the top tier and discuss what are the best sideboard cards against them.
Okay.
As like a little bit, make this a little bit fresher than us just kind of talking about what we talked about in previous episodes. Because I don't think anything we really discussed here, there's definitely some updated stuff in the decks we're talking about are updated, but I do think it's still relevant.
What are we looking for? Oh, you're looking for specific, we're going to talk about specific decks.
So first, Affinity. So Affinity, do you want to go first or I go first?
With sideboard cards?
Yeah.
Against them? I mean, in my opinion, against Affinity, the bomb, just Stone Cold Nuts card is Stony Sounds. And that's through and through the best card you can play against Affinity.
Sure. After that, I think I would say, as the top three, I would go with maybe Ancient Grudge.
Ancient Grudge would be 2 for me.
And then kind of a Shatter Spree, Creeping Corrosion, the Destroy All Artifacts? Or would you go maybe with Destructive Revelries or...
I mean, against Affinity, they go so wide sometimes. You have to be able to get a 2-for-1 out of the card. You have to be able to affect more than
one
permanent.
What's the Overload one?
That's called... Oh, it's not Fragmentize. It's...
Because I love that card. That might be up because it's 5-mana to get everything.
Arterial... No. Oh, how am I forgetting this card? I know the name of this card. It's going to come to me. Vandal Blast. It's called Vandal Blast. Right?
Yes, it is called Vandal Blast.
Yes.
I like Vandal Blast.
Vandal Blast is good. I think the biggest, the most common misconception against Affinity is that Kitaki is good. I think Kotaki's fine. I think it's like...
So we're going to do worst as well?
I just think that that's the biggest trap card for people.
Sure.
Kotaki's fine. It slows them down a little bit. But Kotaki doesn't do anywhere near as much as you think. If you land a Kotaki on turn two against Affinity, it'll very often get removed. And otherwise, they'll just like... If they haven't already played something that's relevant to them, they'll play something, sacrifice like a couple irrelevant things to keep the stuff alive, and then just beat you down with like, you know, a Signal Pest and a Vault Scourge. And just like, you'll just sit there like needing to establish board presence and just die.
Sure.
And Kotaki's fine, but it's just, it's not as impressive as you'd think. It feels like it should be a nuke and it really isn't.
Yeah, I think cards like Creeping Corrosion or Vandal Blast or
you want to be able to nuke that deck.
Kill everything. The only other one on the versatility scale, wear and tear. But that has more to do with just it's like a okay against Affinity and good against other decks, and that's depending if you just want to kind of gain some points.
Kolaghan's Command is really good against them.
True.
That's.
But that's not a sideboard card. That's a main deck card.
It's true.
Sure. But straight up, I think if you really want to talk about it, Stony Silence and Ancient Grudge are like the premier. Titan Shift.
I was, by the way, just before we move on, I was considering and have been considering, is Harsh Mentor a real card? Like, and I asked this question on the group. Yeah, I think you're probably right because Punisher cards in general are bad. But if you do think about with Affinity, it does affect their, like, they'll take damage off of activations on most things in their deck. There's at least 5 or 6 relevant cards in that deck that they'll take 2 damage when they activate. And it's...
I think 1 out of 5 times you have it in play, is it going to really be super relevant?
Right. Otherwise, they might take 6 damage and just still win the game.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Titan
Shift, you said?
Titan Shift. Personally, I think number one is Leyline of Sanctity.
Sanctity?
Sanctity.
Yep.
I think that's probably one of the best sideboard cards in the format in general. And so the problem with the Leylines is they require you to have at least 3 slots in your graveyard. In your sideboard.
Yeah, and the other problem with them is that you really don't want to be playing. You really don't want to be playing more than one kind of leyline and multiples in the sideboard, because then there will be matchups where you kind of want both, and you don't really want to just like have 6 leylines in your main deck.
Which I do think why this leyline is more common than Leyline of the Void, because the problem with Leyline of the Void is just there's other graveyard hate that is as efficient. This is the only card in Modern that's playable that does this.
Yeah, and it is powerful. There's no doubt about it. I mean,
like Titan Shift has to kill you with a Titan. Once you're on that game plan, your paths get to do stuff, which you are playing because you're in white. But
right, yeah. I mean, that card, yeah, for sure, that card's good. Or it's good against that deck. I mean, it's good against Leyline of Sanctity. Is good against a lot of the format. It's good against all of the Shadow variants because it just turns off their hand disruption.
Mm-hmm.
So your game plan exists, whereas like your game plan very often doesn't get to really exist against them.
Mm-hmm.
It's good against any burn. Just it ends Burn's life. There's no game to be played.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, Sanctity's a very good card. I would say against Titan Shift, you're probably right. That's probably the best one. You know, there's cards like Leon and Arbiter and even Mind Sensor that are interesting. But ultimately, that deck just hits land drop after land drop. So, like, it's just going to cast a fatty. And that's the thing, is, like, the search stuff is important. But if you are relying on fragile things in the early turns of the game to beat them, you're not going to get there.
Yeah, no, that's why, like, after that, I put Blood Moon against them. Because at least then you're turning off the Valakut game plan, and you still have problems. But it does a similar thing to Ley Line. And Blood Moon, again, is really good against a chunk of the field.
Yep, true. It's fair.
And last but not least, I think like Surgical Extraction effects in general are pretty decent against them, because you shut off a part of what they're trying to do. And if you can kill a Valakut, Surgical Extraction.
Yeah, you can get rid of Valakut and then remove it.
Yeah.
But you have to be able to kill Valakut and cast Surgical.
Right.
It seems hard.
Yeah, it's fair.
You have to have like Ghost Quarter and Surgical.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Next, Grixis Death Shadow.
Yeah, Grixis Shadow. So their graveyard, it turns out, is really important. If you think about it, I think Leyline of the Void is one of the best cards against them. Without their graveyard, their deck turns into Snapcaster Mages that don't do anything, aside from just flash 2/1s. Tassigers and Gurmag Anglers that they have to cast for 5 or 6 and 7 mana, which they like can get to, but it takes all game. Their Kolaghan's Commands don't do as much as they want.
Mm-hmm.
Their Thought Scours are worthless cards. Their deck gets a lot worse. It's actually shocking how good Leyline of the Void is against Grixis Shadow. Now, they can still tick their life total down and play a Death Shadow against you.
But that's one threat now versus four.
Yeah, and also like the versatility of their deck and what they're trying to do. They don't have a main deck way to deal with that card. They have no way to deal with it. Out of the sideboard, I'm sure they have things they can do, but Leyline of the Void against them is one of the best things you can possibly do. I think it might be the best thing you can possibly do.
What about Chalice on One?
Chalice on One, also very good. Yeah, I would say Chalice on One is probably the other best thing.
Yeah, and that was my pick.
And then Blood Moon, except that Blood Moon is slow against them.
Yes. Yeah. I Chameleon Colossus is one people have thrown around. The Ensnaring Bridge game plan is always kind of good against them, but your deck has to already be doing it. But I think Chalice and Graveyard Hate, stuff like Leyline of the Void, or Rest in Peace if you just don't care about your graveyard, are going to do a lot.
Nile Spellbomb.
Yeah. Nile Spellbomb, sweet.
Leyline is the best of all, though, because it's before they can strip it, and they will be able to strip it most of the time.
Sure. Eldrazi Tron.
Yeah, Eldrazi Tron's really interesting. So they go for like Eldrazi lands, all the Tron lands, they search them out with Expedition maps, and then they play good creatures, and they play Karns, and they play Ballistas. Mm-hmm. So like, Stony Silence here is reasonable. It's not great, but it's reasonable. It turns their Ballistas into just, you know, slow X creatures.
Yep.
Their maps get shut off, and their relics don't work. But it's slow, and if you get it down late in the game, it doesn't do enough. I think that, like, well, what's the best possible thing against them? Like, bigger creature?
You were just going to go after them? That one's hard. Maybe
Blood Moon's good.
Burn. Like, just play the Protect Burn.
Blood Moon's good.
Blood Moon is good. Blood Moon is good against them. Actually, Blood Moon's really good against them.
Yeah, I mean, they can still just cast things, like, but they can't cast.
But there's, Thought Knot Seers can't be cast. Reality Smasher can't be cast.
Well, they have Wastes, though. They play a bunch of Wastes. So they can draw Wastes, and they
okay.
can just play
yeah.
with Wastes, which is annoying. And that's why they do that. So I think, I don't know how many Wastes they play, but I definitely know they play a handful. But yeah, I think that's good. I mean, I think going bigger than them is... Going bigger than them.
Two. They play two.
They play two Wastes? Okay. Going bigger than them feels like maybe the answer. Like
except for Karn. Karn can answer that.
Going bigger?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I think...
Thundermaw Hellkite?
Being aggressive, I guess. I guess being aggressive is the trick.
Like, Dismember
them.
Is really good against them. Yeah. Path is just generically good against them. Like, the thing is, just if you can kill their creatures and you have
Smasher,
a clock...
Smasher is hard to deal with.
You have to discard a card. Lingering Souls,
yeah,
is wow. good against them.
Trample,
no, Smash. But you get to discard it to Smasher as you kill a Smasher.
Oh yeah, that's true. That's good. Yeah, and it blocks Thought Knot Seer well.
Yep.
And yeah, Karn's bad against it. Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Lingering Souls is good against a lot.
Burn.
Core
Firewalker.
Firewalker's my favorite.
Leyline of Sanctity is another one here that I just like wrecks this.
Leyline of what?
Sanctity.
It wouldn't be the Masters of Modern podcast.
How's your hand feel?
It sucks. Leyline of Sanctity is really good. Firewalker is really good. I've seen people play Sun Droplet, but I think it's kind of weak.
I love Sun Droplet as a card. It's fine. It does okay. I really also like cards like what's the gain 10 life or 8 life? If
yeah,
you have
Feed the Clan.
Feed the Clan.
The card's good.
The new one that gains you 8 life for 1 mana.
Yes, right. And if you have Revolt.
If you have Revolt.
Yeah, cards.
Or no, not Revolt. It's something else. It's the new mechanic.
The new keyword from the new set.
It's not a keyword, I don't think. Someone's going to... It's like if something died this turn, gain 8 life. Yeah. It's
morbid?
That. No, well, I mean, it's not morbid, but it's morbid.
Right.
Yeah. So that's good. I like that. Yeah, so that's Burn. Burn is bad against life gain and not being able to do damage to a player.
Yep.
Storm. Once again, going to get on that Leyline train.
Yeah, Graveyard Hate's the best thing you can do against them.
Yep, and Graveyard Hate, both of those two. Like, there's an argument to be made to just play three Leyline of Sanctity and three Leyline of the Void and three Stony Silence. And
or you could just play my four Leyline of the Void, four Leyline of Sanctity main deck that I worked on.
You could play that deck.
I'm convinced that that's still a sweet thing, that four Brutalities main, and you just turn two, you just discard whatever crappy ley lines you don't want, your extra ley lines that are in your opening hand.
Sure.
and just go all in on it.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're playing Lingering Souls, and like that deck was sweet.
I'd be down. I want a creature, like a 2-mana creature, when it enters the battlefield, makes an enchantment into a creature equals to its converted mana cost. Just one though, while it's in play.
While it's in oh, it's like a Phylactery Lich or something.
Yeah,
like puts a counter on it.
Yeah, so like for one white and one colorless, when this creature is on the battlefield, put a feather counter on target enchantment. That enchantment is a
artifact.
Is a creature enchantment with a toughness and power equal to its converted mana.
So attack for 4 on turn 2, and unless they remove it.
Yeah, seems sweet.
Seems sick. It also means they can just remove the ley line now.
Sure, but like this lets you take advantage of why are you playing 12 ley lines.
Yeah, I was definitely struggling with that with the deck. That was why I was trying to come up with all the various ways to get value out of discarding them.
Graveyard Hate's really good against Storm. Just a ley line of the Void, rest in peace. We'll eat them up.
Right.
What's like a less like, oh god, I need 4 slots in my deck to beat Storm?
I mean, there's you can't play more than one spell per turn type of cards.
Yeah, Rule FX.
Yeah, there's two different.
There's Eidolon. There's an Eidolon.
There's Eidolon of Rhetoric, which is that's the 1/4 for 3 that they can't play more than one spell.
There's
and then
Rule
there's,
of Law, and then there's a 2-mana. You cannot play more than one spell a turn unless it's an artifact.
That's Aethersworn Canonist.
Yeah.
And there's the 3/1 for 2 that states.
Can't draw an extra card
each
turn.
Players can't draw more than one card per turn.
Yep.
That I can't think of the name of right now, but yeah. I had one in my sideboard last week.
Also, just Thorn of Amethyst effects. So there's the
Thalia,
Thorn. There's a bird version of both
Hushwing
of those.
Griff?
Hushwing
the,
Griff.
No, that's the other one.
Yeah.
Hushwing Griff's Torpor Orb, I think there's a different one.
Yes. But yeah, so those are all really good effects against Storm.
Counterspells are epic against Storm. Countering one spell in the chain.
Yep.
Is like,
actually, the new cycle trigger, because you can stifle the Storm trigger, copying Storm.
So one guy was playing that against me.
I would play it.
The bird.
Yeah,
he was playing 2 of the bird. I was stoked.
Yep, it's sweet. I'm happy with it. Jeskai Control.
Jeskai Control. Yeah, how do you properly board against this deck? I mean.
It depends on which one it is. Obviously, if it's the Nahiri one, you need to play cards that can kill Nahiri
and
or deal with that problem.
And also get rid of their graveyard.
And get rid of their graveyard.
Snapcasters get worse. Yep. Logic Knots are fair.
But all the other ones, I'm a big fan of stuff like Keranos, like we mentioned before, or just like really hard to beat, impossible to kill threats.
Right.
Or just like a Johnny Vengeance is really good against them. Like in revert, like there's like a bunch of Planeswalkers
right.
that are good against that type of strategy.
Totally.
Just like get rid of their make it so the removal doesn't do anything against you.
Yep.
And get it around counter magic.
I totally agree.
Blue white in the same boat. We talked about Tron. I think I would call that tier 1 and tier 2 currently.
Of the major decks.
Would you think of anything else?
I think you just named the majority of the good ones. I mean, you have variants on Shadow. You have the mid-range decks, which like people aren't really playing right now, like Jund and Abzan.
Yep, which similarly to Jeskai decks, I think just Jeskai's in a better place right now. I think if you really want to get into Dredge, because Dredge is just being hated out right now, the answer to Dredge is Graveyard Hate.
What about Black-Green X, the hardcore like Ghost Quarter, Scavenging Ooze, Green-Black, you know, Kalidus deck?
I mean, depends what your deck's doing. Karanos is great against those types of decks. Playing a Karn is also good against those decks.
Right.
Going
over the top. Mirren Crusader.
Going over the top is always going to be sweet.
Mirren Crusader
was, really
was sweet against the Jund Shadow version. It's not as good against Grixis. It's still decent, but they play Bolt. They can just kill it. But it's sick against the Black-Green deck. It's like unbeatable against them.
Sure.
They have to get you to a point where they can Edict Liliana you. That's like all they can do.
Yep. So that's it for the episode today. It's been a weird episode.
Yeah, we just wanted to talk about sideboarding. We hadn't talked about it in a long time.
So I want to thank all you guys for listening. I want to thank you and make sure you check out the Facebook group we mentioned before. Twitter, I am at Kess Wiley.
I am at Ben Bateman Media.
We are at the MMCast. Make sure to check out collected.company where the Command Zone and We Live and Game Nights and all this other great stuff. Make sure to download the Lifelinker app, which we didn't mention before, but it's a cool life counter app.
I forgot about that app.
Check out Patreon. It really helps us do what we're doing. Ben needs a new cast, and we got to pay for it. So if you can help donate for that, make sure to post about me specifically on as many websites as possible so that I can get my blue check mark on Twitter. Just let me know where that is. And we'll see you guys next week. Thank you so much for listening. Oh, make sure to follow me on Twitter to see the spoiler card this week.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome.
It's a very personal card.
Yep. All right. Bye, guys.
Thank you for your attention. See you later, alligator.